in the passage from Isaiah that Bill just read. Living among the tombs and eating the flesh of swine is a sign of God's judgment, particularly for faithful Jews of that period. But here in Mark chapter 5, we find that even among the tombs and even among the swine, Jesus is present. And so here's that story from Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. Jesus and the disciples came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately a man out of the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. He lived among the tombs, and no one could restrain him anymore, even with a chain. For he had often been restrained with shackles and chains, but the chains he wrenched apart, and the shackles he broke in pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and bowed down before him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he had said to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." He begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there on the hillside, a great herd of swine was feeding, and the unclean spirits begged him, "Send us into the swine, let us enter them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the swine, and the herd, numbering around 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. The swineherds ran off and told it in the city and in the country. Then people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to see Jesus and saw the demoniac sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had had the legion, and they were afraid. Those who had seen what had happened to the demoniac and to the swine reported it. Then they began to beg Jesus to leave their neighborhood. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed by demons begged him that he might be with him. But Jesus refused and said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I believe that one of the most powerful yearnings that we share as human beings is the yearning to be free. The yearning to be our own person. The yearning to make our own decisions and act upon them. The yearning to have a voice, to be able to speak our truth. The yearning to have basic human dignity. That powerful, powerful yearning to be free. Tara Westover wrote a powerful memoir about her growing up in the fundamentalist Mormon family. One of the tenets of that faith was that she could not go to school because the secular schools would poison her mind. And so it was much better that she stay at home and be instructed by her father. And one day Tara announced to her very, very abusive father, "I am going to school." And her father didn't say anything at first, but he just continued to read from his open Bible on his lap. And then Tara said again, "I'm going to school." And Tara started to walk away. And then her father said, "You know the story of Jacob and Esau." And Tara said yes. And Tara not only knew the story, but she knew exactly the application that her father was going to make of that story. And that is, would Tara, like Esau, sell her birthright, the birthright of her family faith, for that mess of pottage that they would teach her in the public schools? And so it wasn't until Tara was 18 and able to go to college that she finally was able to go to school. But she did, and she was free. Surely one of the most powerful yearnings we have is that yearning to be free. And I think of prisoners who have been in prison for 30 or 40 years, and then all of a sudden, newly available DNA evidence frees them. And after all that time of yearning for freedom, at long last, they're free again. Or even someone who is guilty, yearning to be free. And I think of that scene in The Shawshank Redemption when the Morgan Freeman character, Red, once again appears before the parole board. And once each decade, he kept saying, oh, I'm no longer a threat to society. Absolutely, I can tell you that. And then finally, one day at this last hearing, he just said, I don't even know what rehabilitative means. But I wish more than anything I could go back in time and talk to that young kid. But I can't, because he's long gone and only this old man remains. The yearning to be free, a lifelong yearning to be free. In the story from Mark chapter 5, we don't hear much from the man at first. The dialogue is between Jesus and the legion of demons. And missing from the story so far, absent, invisible in the story so far, is the man himself. He is not free. He may be physically strong enough to break chains and shackles, but he is not free. And yet, even though he doesn't have voice, even though we can't hear him, how much he must yearn to be free. How much he must yearn to be free of that possession that he faces. And it's not just people who yearn to be free. I mean, it's not us just individuals who yearn to be free. It's sometimes an entire people who long for freedom. And in the decade of the 60s, around when the Gospel of Mark was written, there was a Jewish revolt in this very area of the Gerasenes in the town of Gerasa. And the emperor Vespasian put down that revolt brutally and killed more than 1,000 Jews. And another leader of a future revolt had come from the city of Gerasa. And the emblem of the Roman troops, the legions, was a wild boar. And so when people were hearing the Gospel of Mark for the first time, and they heard about this legion, which was a Roman military term, going into the swine, and the swine running off the cliff, they understood the promise. The promise was that at long last, somehow at long last, God's people would be free from the tyranny of Rome. And now I want to go back to the man who has been invisible, the man whose voice we have not yet heard. He is powerless over his possession. As our friends in 12 steps often say, that first step is acknowledging that we were powerless over our addiction. And my wife has been trained as a marriage and family therapist. She did an internship in a rehabilitation center not long ago. And one of the things that she brought to my attention was that often it's the 7th or 8th trip to rehab that finally has permanent effect. That is how hard, how strongly many of our addictions bind us. We really cannot get free from them on our own. And even for those of us who don't have the obvious addictions to drug or alcohol or gambling, we may be addicted to certain patterns of relating in our family that were present in our families of origin, that were present as we were raising our kids, and perhaps we may even see repeating themselves in our own children with their children. They're pernicious, and they have a way of repeating themselves generation after generation. It is hard, so hard, to break free from those habits and patterns. Jan Holton teaches pastoral care at a seminary, and before that, she herself was a chaplain in a rehab center. And she remembers how when she was first started serving there, there was a woman named Sarah who had the record sobriety of anyone in the shelter. She had been sober for 12 whole months, and many of the newer women in the shelter looked up to her. But then one night, Sarah came back to the shelter very high on crack cocaine. She was violent, she could not be restrained. The police were finally called, and the other women in the shelter were just weeping. Because after all, if Sarah couldn't maintain her sobriety, they felt, then what hope is there for us? How could we maintain our sobriety when Sarah failed? And Jan, the chaplain, was stroking Sarah's hair, even as the cops were restraining her and holding her down. And she just kept saying over and over again, it will be all right. Eventually, it will be all right. And she said it over and over again as she was stroking Sarah's hair. And then after 2 days in jail, when Sarah came back to the rehab center, she said that she remembered almost nothing from that night, except she remembered someone stroking her hair and a voice saying over and over again, it will be all right. Everything is going to be all right. And just as the demons in this story were named Legion, plural, so are the ones who administer grace in the name of Christ. The helpers are also Legion. That's why it's so critical that we reach out to each other for help. This is part of the reason why we are here as a Christian community. We are Legion. Look at the faces in the sanctuary. We are Legion. Look at the faces on the Zoom call. We are Legion. And we reach out to each other and support each other. And we help us find the way home. We help each other find the way to freedom. And it may not always be the case that there is a clear cut before and after, like this before moment when we were imprisoned by our addiction and this after moment when we are suddenly free. For some people, it does almost happen that way. They can give you the day and the hour and the minute and the second that they quit drinking and they never picked up a drink again. Sometimes it happens that way. But more often than not, it is a very long and slow process. And often the way to get rid or to do battle against the destructive habits is not to despair each time we fall in their grip again, or each time we mess up or stumble. It is instead to keep building the newer, healthier habits. Again, with the help of the Legion, with the help of the Christian community, and with the even greater power of God. The power of God seen in Jesus as Jesus' voice dispelled the demons, as Jesus' voice changed lives. And we also see that with this man himself. After he was healed, he wanted to be with Jesus, perhaps wanted to follow Jesus like the disciples did. But Jesus told him no, a somewhat unusual occurrence. Usually Jesus says, follow me, but in this case, Jesus told the man no, and he told him to do something else instead. He said to go back to your home and tell everyone what I've done for you. And later in the Gospel of Mark, when Jesus returns to that area known as the Decapolis, Jesus was greeted by thousands. And I think the story in between the lines is that this man must have gone back and told hundreds and even thousands of people what Jesus had done. So that by the time that Jesus returned to the Decapolis, there were so many who were there ready to hear Jesus' teaching. At long last, this man had found his calling. At long last, the new habits took over from the old. And at long last, he was free. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.